Hi, you're listening to Snacks and Chats. It's brought to you by GoodRally.com. Snacks and Chats is a podcast where we interview a bunch of talented, creative people. And generally, we begin the interview with the question, when people ask you where you're from, what do you tell them? We did that in this interview with Chelsea Jade, but we had some tech issues with the mics at the start, so we're beginning the podcast a little bit later on in the interview. Chelsea's answer, by the way, is she's from New Zealand. Even though she was born in South Africa, she says New Zealand. And Kay Road is the place in New Zealand that most feels like home for her.
I actually quit art school and moved to Kay Road, in that order.
That seems, yeah, it seems like something that would go with art school.
Yeah, I think like the proximity to the two main venues that I played at, which was Whammy Bar and the Wine Cellar, you literally only had to move your gear across one street.
So you're lazy.
It was so deeply convenient. When you're playing by yourself, you know, it's a concern. Like the most miserable time I've ever had in music was my setup used to be like a keyboard stand with a plank on the top. And then I'd have, like, all my gear on the top, like a MIDI keyboard and SPD and, like, my laptop and with Ableton running or whatever, like a vocal processor. Most of that stuff fit in a little travel suitcase, but the plank was always a problem.
You just fold it up and just take it. Yeah.
And I remember, like, I went to, like, CMJ in New York, and it was just so, if depression can be conjured in a situation, it's that situation where you're alone. Nobody gives a shit about you, what you're doing, and you're physically being told that, like, your body is being told by what you're doing that it sucks, like, you know. And then when you get there, like, no one really gives a shit, you know. It's like all terrible. Ooh, no.
It would be hard to make a city like New York, where something is happening all the time anyway, care about something like that. Anyway, that's just
I learned something from that, I guess. It's kind of like, why would you put yourself in a scenario? Well, this is just like my thought at the moment. It might change in the future. But like, why would you put yourself in a scenario where there are so many competing events?
Exactly.
And you don't have the edge in any way. Like, especially when you're by yourself. It's like, if you don't have a publicist or like someone to like get you on the good showcases, you're literally just like, it's like going swimming in the middle of the ocean and expecting to like have a relaxing time. Wild. And now I like, in terms of gigs, like I play with a band, but that's a reaction to playing alone. Like I don't like it. It's not fun. I like to have a little huddle before you go on stage. We say nice things to each other and you like establish that there's a team dynamic and that nothing matters. I really like that.
Do you have an idea of how long it took you to realize that playing alone is not the way to go?
Yeah, I decided to stop playing when I moved to Los Angeles. I actually thought that I wasn't going to be an artist anymore. I thought I was just going to be a songwriter for other people. And then I did that for like a year, and then all the songs that I made just actually made up my album. The way that I wrote my songs was that I would have sessions with friends and would write a song in a day. Like most of my album was written, each song was written in a day. But like all of those people had publishers, music publishers, and then they'd send the song to their publisher, and then the publisher would like come to me and ask for a meeting, and then I'd go to a meeting. And the result of those meetings is always, like until you have leverage, it's always like, okay, cool, so we can set you up with this person, and just keep in touch. But actually that's good for me because all I wanted to do was just like be doing sessions all the time.
That's interesting.
So you weren't writing them for you? You were writing them for other people?
The songs on my album, they were written with really close friends.
Mm.
So it was an intimate experience. But when it was like going into rooms with strangers, I'd never write for myself that way. Because it's really just like trying to learn the psychology of being in writing rooms. But anyway, so like, what was the question again?
When did you realize that you didn't want to do the alone thing anymore?
Yeah, and they'd always ask in the meetings. They'd be like, so, because I'd be like doing my artist project anyway, like regardless of how well it was doing, I was always contributing to it or doing something to do with it. And they'd always ask me in the meetings like, okay, so how much like of what you're doing is your artist project and how much as your writing thing, and like how do you split those two things? And I'd always be like, oh, you know, like I just want to be a writer, and I'm like, I'm not really an artist, blah, blah, blah. And then gradually the answer became, because I just like kept going to these meetings, the answer became like, it's like 50-50, like one needs the other.
Mm.
And then I played my first show, which was only in November of last year, like my first LA show, where I had like put my dream band together. My friends had all helped me put it together, and they just were susceptible to anything I wanted to do. And so like I made like all these like secret harbored dreams come true of like being in Destiny's Child. So we all like learnt choreography and stuff. And then I was like, after that show, like I really fucking killed it. And I was like, I'm a fucking artist. This is bullshit. Like,
yeah.
I'm really selling myself short. And the best shit I do is for my artist project.
That's interesting to me that you went over thinking that you didn't want to be an artist anymore. Do you know why you got to that point?
I was just scared. I didn't know how to do it there.
Right, so it was just being there that you told yourself, I'm in LA, it's not going
to
happen
yeah,
for me.
Yeah, yeah, totally. And like not knowing how to facilitate that whole thing, and like the kind of writing thing was accessible, because I arrogantly believe myself to be a very good lyricist, and I've never doubted that. Like,
you are a very good lyricist.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's great. You're great. You're a fucking great lyricist.
Thank you. Well, like interestingly, like the artist thing that was in question in my mind, but like never the writing. Like I was always convinced I was a good writer.
But you enjoy the collaboration though, right? In those writing rooms, that's something that you also really enjoy?
For sure. My preference actually, there's like different ways to do it. My preference is, because you can do like just writing with other writers and a producer, or you can do it where it's you're writing with an artist in the room and a producer and maybe another writer. But like that's my favorite scenario, because if it's an artist that I believe in, which is like obviously I like to be in rooms with things I believe in because no one gets paid.
True.
I like that because it's like somebody has a strong idea of what they want and all you're doing is like buying into them. Like,
yep.
And you're just like, what is it going to take? How can I help you be the thing you want to be? And like, how can I help you say what you want to say in an effective way?
And you don't have to be, I imagine the fear about helping them achieve that is not there in the same way as it is with your own stuff, right? Like it's...
Totally.
You're a bit more removed from that and you can be a bit more logical maybe with like how you go about that.
Totally. And you also don't have to take responsibility for anything. It's true, because like I would like examine every idea to make sure it's good or whatever, but like I can always like say what I think about something that someone's written as we're writing it. But at the end of the day, like if they want to do it, I don't mind. Like you in the end of the day, like you have final veto. I'm totally happy with that. Like, I have no ego about that.
Yeah.
And also have all of my ideas. Like, the more that I can give away, the more I'll think of. Like, it's like exercising a muscle. Mm. Which is another thing I learned. Like, don't hoard ideas.
The writing your songs, this is when you talk about writing songs in one day, that's for your own project that you're talking about? So
that, I don't know if I could do it now.
Mm.
Yeah, I think you have to get into a rhythm of doing it all the time to get to that place. But like Ben knows, like I would be tortured writing songs before. He watched me torture myself angry and like hated myself because I just couldn't.
Is it because you were trying to do it all kind of yourself?
Well, it's because I was like trying to do it well, but like what is that? Like you just don't know until you've done it. I just feel like just make a blueprint and you can always change it. It's not life or death. If you like keep working on your thing, your like natural sense of taste and your taste level carries through all of your ideas, I guess. You write the way you write. Like it's so always
you just
like
maybe get better at it.
Yeah,
you do. Time.
Yeah.
That's kind of, I guess, a similar theme on Personal Best, the song, right? I guess your best is always changing or whatever.
Totally.
Shifting goalposts, that sort of thing.
Totally. That song's actually based on a Barney song. Like I heard a song on Barney when I was like a kid.
Yeah.
Or maybe it wasn't even Barney. I think I found a version that Barney did on the internet. The Barney the Big Dinosaur.
Yeah.
But we did it in primary school and it goes like, my hat, it has three corners. Reconas has my head. And then as you keep going, you drop out words. So like, my, it has three.
That's amazing.
But we tried to like, so I like produce a song myself and then gathered two friends because I don't really produce by myself. It's the only song on the record that I produce by myself. I like brought in two friends to like give me any hints or tips or tricks or like, what do you think should happen with this? And we tried to do a version where the words drop out. It was ridiculous. It was like, they don't have a visual aid, Chelsea. So we did weird stuff. And some of the stuff is still in there, like me coughing. We did
There is a little bit of dropping out of words, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And like shrieking and just like weird stuff.
Yeah.
And then we like did all of that, like in the order that it was. And then we went for lunch and we came back and we were like, this is bananas.
This is batshit. Yeah.
So we just like pulled it back a little bit.
But it must have been fun.
It was really fun.
Yeah.
I read that the feedback you used to get when you were at art school was that your work was too refined, and how you used to think that was a compliment. And looking back now, you're like, oh no, it's because I couldn't like progress or move forward or whatever.
Well, mostly it was like, they're telling you that you're not doing work, really. Basically what they're saying is like, you've just put something up and nobody knows why. Nobody can see the work. There's no process,
right?
Which means that there's no concept, which means that there's no, it's not a strong piece of work if you can't draw a line from through your thought process. Like,
right. When there's,
you've just like done something and thought that was fine. My thing was that I just hated putting working versions of things up for criticism because I already knew what was wrong with them. I didn't want to put them up for debate. But it's not how art school works.
Yeah. that's why you dropped out.
Twice.
Yeah. I want to know, so hang on. So
you know for sure now.
So you dropped out and then did you go back to the same art school?
No, I went back to a different. Just, I assumed a new identity.
Yeah. and you're still like, no, this is not for me.
No, yeah. And then at the end of that, Universal New Zealand gave me like a little crumb of money to like keep writing songs. I think I had like started doing Chelsea Jade and then I went to New York and started writing Night Swimmer, which is a song that...
I love that song.
Thanks.
It's one of my favourites.
Yeah, I really think it's a very good song, actually. And it's like, I think that was a really interesting point. I was like, fuck this with art school.
Mm.
And my friend Justin Pilbrow, who is a producer, I'd met him once in New York, and he's from New Zealand. We were like DMing, and I was saying how miserable I was at art school, and he was like, just leave. Just come to New York and we can make a record. And I was like, all right.
Okay, yeah.
With this money that Universal had given me. It was probably how much they spent on like espresso martinis at company dinners. Less than that. I didn't really know how to do music by myself, but Justin didn't let me get away with anything. Like, he knew how my mind worked. I didn't think in a linear musical way. But he was like, okay, so how are you going to funnel that into music? Like, how are you going to make songs? And so he was like, you should go out and buy a handheld recorder and just go around the city. And we're not going to use samples that everyone else is using. We're going to use your samples. And then he'd like set them up on a MIDI keyboard and he'd leave the room for a couple of hours. Like, that's how he made songs. With him like forcing me to like learn. And
that's
that was
cool.
The trip that I wrote Night Swimmer. And then I'd like walk back to my friend's apartment where I was staying and like I would just spend the whole night trying to write lyrics for the next day. I remember like exactly when I wrote Night Swimmer in her bed. We were like sharing a bed. I'd met her a month before in a shop.
Yeah.
This girl. So whatever. It was a very strange time. Where was I going with that?
Not sure.
Oh.
This is just all right. Good yarn about Night Swimmer.
Oh, yeah. But I guess like I was trying to like say that I had like an art school way of thinking.
Right, right, right.
I never like divorced myself from that. I just like tried to apply it to pop music. But I really think after Night Swimmer, I like didn't know I was like, how do I replicate? Like, now I know how I want to sound. Like, how do I do that again? And it was really hard. And that's where I started putting pressure on everything.
Because that's the video with the big block of ice, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Such a great video. Thanks. And I think you've consistently made the best videos, like, in New Zealand, I reckon.
Never won a New Zealand Music Award for my videos. So
yeah, which is travesty. Do you direct your own videos or...?
I've only started, like, admitting that I'd co-direct my videos.
Right.
Like, the concepts are always mine. And I think that's, like, a testament to... That's why I work with the same person every time, which is Alex Gander, because he's never trying to, like... force concepts and treatments on me. He always just asks what I want to do. And then when I say, like, I want to hug a block of ice, he's like, okay, cool, so how are we going to do that? It's never like a, ugh, how, ugh, like,
yeah,
that's so dumb. It's just like a how.
He's never too cool for the idea or whatever.
Yeah, he's never above anything. And it works.
And do you choreograph all the stuff as well, all the dances?
Yeah, the first, like, dancing one, I guess, was Lowbrow. And I actually worked with, like, a young dancer called Tori Manley just on, like, because I hadn't, like, done dance classes or anything in a long time. We'd go to a school gymnasium and she'd just yell out, now act like you don't have any bones. Like,
oh, you would bloody love that.
Just cool stuff. Yeah. It was really fun.
Yeah.
And, like, working out how to, like, use your body in different ways and think about it and stuff. And then got in the space, which was Silo Park. And then the Life of the Party one, I called up comedian Chris Parker. And we, like, worked on stuff for a bit. But then it, like, kind of changed when we got in the space. Because we also got these big screens.
Moving. Yeah.
And I was like, how are we going to do that?
But I think that must... Putting so much of your original thought and ideas... into those videos as well. I imagine that must be a huge mental load that you have to, that, like, another thing that you're sort of loading onto yourself.
I could not hand that off to anybody else. I think that would be dishonest for my project. But I think I also can't do admin. Like, I'm so bad at admin. I just spent the last week hanging out with a lot of cool women, one of the coolest women ever. Susan Rogers, who was Prince's engineer, she was talking about how, from her experience, what can be useful in terms of success in music and many artistic pursuits, actually, is, like, these four different personalities. And one is the artist, obviously. But in order to facilitate the work, you need nerds.
Yeah.
Like, engineers and producers and, like, people that
technical
will
minded.
Support mm-hmm. a support character that will facilitate the idea. And then you need, like, the social entrepreneur who's gonna crow about your work and sell it. Like, who's gonna sell it? And then you need the bully who is competitive and wants to make the money, basically, or, like, compete with, you know. And you need all those characters, and they could be embodied in one person, but I mean, that's uncommon. And, like, I can probably do two of those things.
And do you have the others?
I think at this point I do. But that's something I'd never hand off because I'm good at it. Why would I not do it?
Yeah, because you have belief in your vision enough. You're not insecure about your vision or bringing it to life.
It's more like I would be really insecure if I was participating in somebody else's idea and then I couldn't believe in it when it was finished. Like, I'd rather, like, be like, ah, that wasn't great, or, like, I could have done that better, knowing that I can stand behind it. As opposed to, like, just resenting somebody else for...
And being like, oh, maybe it didn't work because of them.
Yeah, totally.
Going back to that quote from art school where the thing was about being too refined and that sort of thing, how did you learn to unrefine yourself, be able to just let things out into the world without tinkering away forever?
My entry point was moving to LA, having a few punishing sessions with close friends where I just would beat myself up if I couldn't write the next line, to, like, that really, like, fracturing a working relationship. And I had to, like, be like, oh God, like, I have to figure this out. And then pretending that I was writing for someone else was the key. Not, like, taking total making everything have to reflect exactly how I thought I wanted to be seen, instead of just like writing a song. Like, I like music, like just write some.
And did writing for other people help you do that, pretending to?
Well, it was just pretend, like nobody wanted to write with me when I first moved to LA. It was like, it was really just exploiting my friendships and like, you know, begging for sessions with them. Like people like Leroy Clampett, who moved a little bit before me, and he was like toiling away in his room for a year, and then he got like a Justin Bieber cut. He had a studio behind a vape store in like near Santa Monica, and I would just take the 1.5-hour bus ride because I had no money and write with him for a day. He was so generous. He like would give me almost a session a week, actually.
Was he the main kind of collaborator on the album? Or?
Yeah, he was. And then I started working with Sam McCarthy more when I finally like worked out how to not punish the person I was working with.
Before we started, yeah. You mentioned that you'd been crying all week.
Good tears, happy tears. I was crying because if someone had asked me even 2 weeks ago how many female producers I'd worked with, I would have said 2, and I would have had to think about it. But now I helped APRA put on this event, kind of like modeled after a regular songwriting camp, which are events that happen all the time, where there are several writing rooms going with producer in them. We did it at Roundhead, and it was just all women producers, all women songwriters, all women engineers, all women. The first time I cried was that I had to give a little opening speech. I just looked around the room and I was like, fuck, this feels good. Like, damn, this feels good. I just couldn't bloody contain myself. Oh, and then at the end of the week, this is unheard of. Like we had a listening party of all the songs that have been made that week. Every single one a banger. Not a shit song in the bunch. Like, it was amazing. And then this never happens, okay? One of the participants, one of the artists who had been invited there, had organized for everyone to write like a big note to each of the international guests, including me, and like gotten them a box of chocolates from like Chocolate Boutique, and gave like a little speech about how each person had affected.
Oh.
It was like, holy shit, this is too much. Like, it's the best. I feel like that's feminine energy. It's definitely so affecting and nurturing and needed. And it was so special. It's
obviously something you wished you had when you were coming up.
Totally. Yeah. I'm still coming up, mate. But half of the reason I wanted to put this on is selfish. Like, I want to work with all these people and I want to be exposed to female producers.
Yeah.
And now everyone at that camp can say they've worked with minimum 5 female producers.
What is it about a room full of women that makes you feel like that? Is it because it's so rare, or what is?
It's very rare.
Mm.
It's also just like, it's just almost an experiment. It's like, it's so dominated by men. Like, walking into a room, you see the back of a producer, like boy on a computer, and you are sitting at the back, and it's like, you're never like in that zone, you know? But automatically, like, you feel like you're in that zone when there's a woman in the room somehow, you know? You're like, there's a little understanding there. There's less to navigate, kind of. There's no ego, no fights, no anything. Like, it was all just love. It was amazing. And skill, like fucking a lot of skill.
Do you want to talk much about your what you were filming yesterday?
I basically, like, I've always wanted, because Sister Act 2 is my all-time favorite film. Do you know it?
I know it so much. Sister Act 2, the one with Lauryn Hill.
Yeah, the one with Lauryn Hill. Sister Act 2 usurps Sister Act 1.
Yeah, it's definitely
insane how much better it is. Like,
what?
They sing. What? You've never seen Sister Act 2?
Happy day.
Yeah, that's the first one.
No, that's the second.
Okay, well, I like the second one. Oh, happy day. Okay, cut that bit out.
So, like that. And then I also used to have this, I had this horrible job in LA. That I was so sad and hated every minute of it. It was actually like running a rehearsal space, and it was like there were no women around ever. I used to watch St. Joseph's Māori Girls School Choir on YouTube. You should look it up. Māori Television did like a really beautiful video of a couple of songs. Anyway, so like those two factors made me like really want to make a choir video for a song. And I got Godfrey de Grew from the University of Auckland to like pop school to do a choral arrangement of one of the songs on my record, and then got New Zealand Music Commission to like recommend some choirs, and St. Mary's and Freeman's Bay, I guess. I like contacted them and they were super keen. Yeah, they learnt the song, and like I only went to one rehearsal and I didn't even say anything. I just fucking cried.
But you were singing with them?
No.
Oh.
No. No, because the kind of the concept of the video is the song doesn't lend itself to me singing it in this context. It's more about them acting as my thought process and singing all of these ugly thoughts that I have back to me so I can hear them. I'm really just standing there while they sing my song to me. Yeah.
What song is it? Can you
say? It's called Perfect Stranger, which is another reason I thought it'd be good not to. My face is never shown. That's the plan for
is
now.
That what
I don't know about the edit.
About?
The song's about jealousy.
Yeah, I thought it was in my head. I was like, "Oh, this is about like another woman or something."
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's exactly. Just thinking somebody that is unknown is better than you.
Yeah,
and like that somebody can see them as being more perfect because they can't get close enough to see the flaws, you know?
Yeah, no, that's what I. That's how I took it as well. Everyone's perfect when they're a stranger.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah,
but also like in terms of the video, jealousy is also the ugliest feeling I've ever experienced. Like the only reason I could write that song is because I've like gained enough perspective to know how ugly it is and how little I want to experience it.
Mm.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I feel like it's an interesting thing to be able to examine your thought processes and like how they really affect you. And I guess that's kind of the point. It's kind of that thing like how do you deal with like somebody who's angry or like being confrontational with you, and it's like you just don't say anything and let them hear themselves talk, you know?
Mm.
Anything you could say would just enforce and create more tension and more friction, you know? You're like rubbing up against them. If you just like let them rage, like all they're hearing is their own voice.
Mm.
And I kind of feel that way about how I learned about not being jealous. Does that make sense?
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
I'm so allergic to feeling that way ever again. Because it was so toxic for me. I really like, I let it run me so
it
often.
It consumes you, right, when you're like,
yeah,
that.
Totally.
Yeah.
That's gross, man.
Yeah. You can't do anything when you feel like that.
When I actively started like, especially other women, like as soon as I actively decided to like just be in love with every woman I meet, like, God, it got so much easier and like I felt so much better.
Was it like rivalry between women type jealousy, or was it like professional jealousy or just jealousy in general that you felt
was so abstract? It was like romantic jealousy, you know? I was so insecure.
Well, I think take music, for example, or whatever, there's so few women that when there's a room full of men and two women, of course they're going to be pitted against each other or naturally compared or whatever because there's so few of them. Which is probably why something like a room full of women feels so beautiful, like the camp or whatever.
I won't say who, but like a couple of men came through like during the week of this camp. They felt really uncomfortable and they were like, okay, I get it. I get where your discomfort comes from in the opposite scenario. It's like, yeah.
Why did it take you a year to, you're hanging onto your album for a year or it had been done for a year? And
I couldn't afford to put it out.
Right.
So, like, my method, which was criticized by the New Zealand Herald, was to, like...
I was so fucked off at that. I read that review. I was real mad.
I was like, aren't you supposed to just act like no one's heard it and talk about the music?
It's like that's not a review of the music. That's just...
You're personally affronted by how I put it out.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's like I didn't have the money to put it out. I can't tell you how broke I've been over the past 2 years. It costs $250 to master a song. It costs $15 to upload it to a distribution network to like get it out. Like those numbers, even $15 was too much. The way that I had planned to do it was that I would get one song mastered, put it out as a single, use the Spotify money to pay for the next one to get mastered, and like that's how I was going to do it. Luckily, somebody came in and paid for my mastering. It was a generous benefactor.
So I had always assumed you had album backing, but you are completely independent.
Yeah.
Sorry. Should have known that.
No, I mean, like, I think, to be honest, this is a discussion that I've had with people, and it sounds arrogant, but I'm just going to fucking run with it. I feel like the product that I present looks actualized and, like, there's money behind it because I think I make it look expensive.
The other thing that makes me think that is the placements you have in, say, somewhere like The Fader or, you know, there are some, I think, oh, there must be a decent machine behind you to get stuff like that.
So, before, like 6 months ago, I didn't have anyone. I didn't have managers. I didn't have anyone. So, like, every placement I got was me hustling, bothering people, emailing 5 times to get them. And I only had the energy to get like one premiere per thing. So like, so I was like doing my own PR, but I got good looks. Like I got Nylon, ID, Vice, like I got all of that shit by myself. And then when I finally got managers, they were like, that's insane.
That you yeah, it is. Because again, it's just it's such a mental load. Like having, when you talked about all the 4 different people you need or whatever, you're being so many of those people. Like you're being the bully, you're being the person who has to sing your praises, and you're being the artist or whatever.
I know, and I just don't think, I don't enjoy that.
Yeah.
Like I don't want to have to deal, like to me, PR is, I mean, like it's disrespectful to PR people to be doing that yourself. It's like, that is a full-time job. Yeah.
You send it as yourself?
Yeah.
No fake email or anything. I mean, I've got a fake email, yeah.
I know, I have given that advice to other people. If you can't find the wherewithal to do it under your own name, definitely use that. Like, why not?
Mm.
But now I have PR. They got me The Fader. And I'm like, thank God for you. Like, because I can only get one at a time. Like, I can do it, but I can only do one at a time.
And do they help with all the playlisting and stuff as well?
No. That's a distributor. That's kind of like half a mystery to me.
Mm.
When I was doing it myself, I had one champion at Spotify in Australia, and he would really help me. Then when I got managers, he was like, okay, you don't actually need to be thinking about this. Like, I'm going to email your managers and we can strategize stuff. I don't know if this is being too frank about this, all the stuff, but...
Maybe, how does this work?
I don't think that anyone really knows.
No. And then you have to know
something. Was,
no.
For, to get, it on
to like, get like a playlist. Good playlist or something.
That's how you get the plays, honey.
Yeah. But you have, so you've been getting a lot more plays and a lot more video plays as well.
Yeah, I think it's my managers are very good. That's what I think. Like they're going to bat for me. Like you need to be on people's backs and they're doing that where I like they're leaving me room to actually do the work of being an artist.
Yeah. It's great. I've always been, for as long as I've discovered you or whatever, I've always been a fan and always thought like you're a brilliant writer, a great pop writer, but it always used to piss me off. I'd be like, where's the fucking views on this song? This song is so good. I'm like, it's as good as any like pop, like worldwide pop song, you know? But I've been real happy to see it getting it what it deserves.
Money has been made. I can vouch. She's mentioned to me several times.
I never doubted the quality of the work, like, and I feel good about that. I really just always knew that like you can't do it all yourself. It's a mechanism. Like there's a game that you have to play. And it's not even a game. It's just like, this is how it is. Like this is the energy that you have to have. Well, I don't know. I shouldn't say have to. For what I want to do, I need that.
And now that you have management and people to be able to do that other stuff for you and your album's out, what do you want to do now?
I want to put out another EP by the end of the year.
Great. Yeah. And then be like, dude. See that, Harold?
Yeah. I was like, what are you talking about? Like, they were like complaining that there were only 6 new songs. It's like, okay, 7, because I literally just put one out a month ago to promote this record. Yeah. Like,
and I was like, that's like the traditional rollout of an album, right? The way you did it. Yeah. Like, that's the most traditional way to have done it.
Yeah. And especially like now, like that's how you do it, especially like, no one puts out albums. You put out 1,000 singles and then you compile them. They're basically compilations of singles.
Mm. Yeah.
And who complains about every song being a single?
No, it's like only idiots.
They all bang.
That's what you want, right?
But then I hate to, I feel terrible. But like also like he complained that the last song on the record wasn't enough of a banger. It's like, well, what do you want then? Like, do you want all singles or do you want B-sides also? Like what? Pierce is a banger. No, I shouldn't take it so personally. I just took this personally because like it's my hometown paper and like,
yeah.
I'm like, come on, this is like a tough thing about New Zealand. Like, can't you just like support me for once? Like, you know, I don't know.
Do you feel like you've been supported in general?
I feel like, I don't know whether it's a mental thing I put on myself, but I do feel like judged, like hyper judged.
Mm.
I don't know if that's real or like, I really want New Zealand's approval, yeah. Like really badly, but I'm setting myself up for heartbreak. Like,
I mean,
it's too cool.
So what's home to you now?
LA.
LA's home.
Well, because I have my own, I'm living alone for the first time. It's really interesting. Like there's one place in this world where nobody else has touched anything and it's my studio apartment in Los Angeles. And like, I need that. Because the rest of my life is so unpredictable. I don't know what's, like, happening from one week to the next. To, like, have one place where, like, I'm in charge of whether those plants live or die,
it's
you know?
All your shit.
It feels really important and good.
So do you think your answer will change soon? Will New Zealand not be the answer you give, maybe?
I'll always say New Zealand. Like, to be honest, like, this week people have been saying to me, like, oh, like, your accent... And I was like, what? Like, I'll lose my shit if I don't retain my New Zealand accent. Like, that'll really upset me. But I think I sound the same.
I haven't noticed anything.
I think I always sounded a little bit Canadian. Am I wrong?
Not American, Canadian, guys.
Cool. Because I have a monotony about my voice. Like, it's not like American
enthusiasm.
That's why I'm Canada. No. Like, you want me to talk about crystals?
A boot.
Hey, thanks for listening all the way through Snacks and Chats. If you liked it, rate us, say nice things about us, tell your mates about us. And also go to goodrally.com if you want to see a written version of this interview, which will include all the videos and songs we talked about. And you should also go there to look at all the other interviews we've done because they're all really good. Bye.